Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste. And those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. Today is Thursday, February 11th, 2021. Tonight's show, Dr. Vision is interviewing Danny Muhammad. He's a farmer, a brother, that has land, and he is utilizing his land to grow livestock. And so this is what we need for a community. We need to be able to feed ourselves, clothe ourselves, and also to have livestock and milk, and then things that we need for us to build communities. So Dr. Ridgely, I see you're on the line. If you can press that one on your dial, Dr. Ridgely. And I see Sister Ann, she's pressed the one. I'm gonna open Sister Ann's mic. Okay, and Dr. Vigi.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Vigi, and assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, the brother, sir. Danny, is he on yet?
Brother Danny, if you can press the one on your dial so I can open up your mic, press the one on your phone pad, and I will open your mic. What area code is he calling in from, Dr. Vigi?
I don't know. I'm driving.
Oh, okay. Brother Danny, press the one on your phone, and we will open up your dial. Yeah, because we have people in the queue right now, but I don't know which one is him. Brother Danny,
because,
if you're on the line, press that one so we can get you on the air.
Because Sister Niambe, you know, set it up, and I don't have the number for the person. Well, anyway, until he shows up, you know, the type of questions I wanted to ask him is, how long has he been farming? What got him into farming? Why did he choose livestock? And does he have, was he raised on a farm? Did he learn it from his family members? And then, is that his only income? Because one thing that people must understand, that a lot of times farmers, farming is a secondary income. The majority of farm families make their money off of job off the farm, okay? And even though they sell products on the farm, even some big farmers I know, they have other jobs, and they pay their workers to do a lot of the work, but they have high-paying jobs. And also a reason why they get jobs, I want you to listen very carefully, is so they can get medical insurance.
Oh, my God.
Because as a farmer, you got to pay your own insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, you couldn't get Social Security as a farmer.
Mm.
That was left out. Domestic work and farm work was left out of Social Security. I think they've put it back in now. Put it in. But most of the older, you know, farmers, they had to get another job to secure both insurance and Social Security.
So is that because back in the day, most farmers were black?
Oh, well, not that most farmers were black, but like 13% of the farmers in 1910, when we had 16 million acres of land, 13% of the farmers were black.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, back in Social Security didn't come up to the New Deal,
right?
In the 1930s. Yeah, that's when the Social Security came in, and so the black farmers that were farming at the time, they did not qualify, and neither did the white farmers at that time. But who knew that Social Security was just going to be such a big deal? I mean, right now, it is a very big deal for the majority of the American citizens. So again, as we studied, you know, farming and farm income, the average farm income is negative.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's been that way for a while. It's negative. And this is why the government steps in to subsidize the farms, because the prices don't keep up with the cost. But the government didn't subsidize the black farmers.
Mm.
And so over this 50, 60 years, you know, basically all the black farmers were wiped out, but the white farmers were kept in place because of your tax money. So, again, people don't really know all the ins and outs of farming, and I didn't know, even though I went to school supposedly to learn about agriculture and farming. It wasn't until I got out and actually tried to farm out here at Muhammad Farms, because my family did not have any land. We were not farm owners. So I was learning from scratch. And I got involved with the Black Farm lawsuit, and that's why when I learned a whole lot about the economics and the discrimination towards the black farmer and the devastating economic effect it had on him and his whole family when they kept prices low as the cost of production kept going up, and eventually white farmers bought all the land from the black farm. Is our brother Danny, did he show up yet?
Brother Danny, we are ready to have you on the show. If you could press the one on your dial, brother Danny.
but you know they're in a different time zone, so you might want to text Sister Nyambe. I know she's in a meeting, but text her to see if she can contact him, because he might be looking at the wrong time, because he's out there in Texas, which is I don't know what time of time zone that is. We'll check with her.
Central.
Right, right.
Yes, I'm sending you
anyway,
right now.
Yeah, check the right now to see. So, in the farming, and another question I want to ask the brother is has he been down to his county extension office? Because as Dr. Martin Luther King said in 1968, before he was killed, he talked about how the government helped the Europeans who immigrated here, gave them land, and then set up land grant institutes, teach them how to farm. And the extension service for these land grant institutes that are in each state and each county, they have the extension service that they learned that from Tuskegee. And Booker T. Washington, they started that. It was a traveling training going to the farmers. Then the institutions going around teaching the white farmers how to farm. But now many of those county extension offices, we know here in Georgia, they're shutting down as the older people retire. They just shut it down, and you have to go to another county. So we always tell people who want to farm, you need to check with your extension service to see how they can help you. Because farming in one county is not the same as the farming in the next county because of the difference in climate and soil. And since we are not inheriting a farm from family, and we did not live on that farm all of our life until now, we want a farm the way it happens with most young white farmers, their parents were farmers. And at one time, that was the situation with us. But they wiped that out. They gave money to the farm children to study anything but agriculture. So a lot of the black farmers' children took scholarships never to return to the farm. So now that knowledge,
wow.
Not just the land, but the knowledge of the land that could have been passed down was not. And so now we want to get started in the farming, but we don't have a clue. And the land grant institutions just don't teach farming anymore. They teach you how you can get a job for the government or the chemical companies, but not how to farm. So, you know, this is why we did the book, The Science and Business of Farming versus the Art and the Hobby of Gardening. Tell people, you know, they call me up or somebody recommends them to me and say, you know, they want to farm. They want to, you know, ask you some questions. I said, do they have the book? And because all I know, I put in that book.
Yes, sir.
And that book teaches you how to think as a farmer and how to make decisions as a farmer, along with, you know, what equipment you're going to need to do that and other, how long it's going to take you to do certain tasks. You need to know these things because you can get in your own self way very quickly by overreaching and not having the time or the labor or the equipment to do it in a timely manner, because in farming, everything is a matter of time. Just like right now, I'm carrying a worker home because the person who we use a ride with that picks him up and takes him home didn't come in today. And we had tasks to do, so I had to pick him up. Now I got to take him home. But we had to work until we got a certain level done, because time don't wait.
Yes, sir.
As a farmer, you just got to keep rolling until you finish. So you hear any word from Brother Danny yet?
Brother Danny, if you are on the call, if you push that one on your keypad, that will open up your mic, and we can get you in the show, put you in the queue. So, Brother Danny, if you're on the line, push the one on your dial, and we will open up your mic and bring you in the show. I sent a text to Sister Nyambe, and she said she's going to reach out to him.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. Well, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, farming is just hard, a lot of hard work. They don't really appreciate, not only is it hard work, but you got to put a lot of thought into it. You got to do a lot of thinking. You got to do a lot of planning. You got to keep a lot of records, if nothing but in your head. Because what you see this year, the climate won't be the same next year. And you won't see the same thing next year that you saw this year.
Yes, sir.
It may take 10 years for the same set of circumstances because of the weather, the climate, the soil, the cycles, that you might not, you know, see it, the same exact thing in 10 years from now. But if you had lived on the land all your life, you would have experienced these things. I give you another example of why that's so important. When the Russian Revolution and the communists took over throughout the Tsar, they wanted to consolidate the smaller farms into large run farms. And so they ran the people off. They got the land and they put a lot of people on it. Then they put their scientists at work, and they thought that they could run these big farms using scientific agriculture. Well, the problem is, they didn't know the soil. They didn't know that climate. It's very important that you know the climate. I give you, and so what happened, I'm going to go back and give you another reason why it's important. So what happened, millions of people died of starvation for those first couple of years of Stalin and the communism in Russia, because they ran the people who knew the climate, who knew the soil, who they ran them people off and put new people there who did not know, and they tried to implement the best they could, but they failed. And one thing about Mama Nature, you know, she's cruel. There's certain things you're supposed to do, and you better do it, because if you don't do it, you won't get a crop.
Dr. Midgley.
As simple as that. Yes.
Sister Nyambe says he should be on the line. So, Brother Danny, if you are on the call, press the 1 on your keypad, and that will put you in the queue, and I'll open your mic. Brother Danny Muhammad, if you're on the call and tonight's show, press that 1, and I see a light on, and this may be him. Is this Brother Danny?
Yes.
Assalamu alaikum.
Yeah. Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, sir. We've been waiting on you.
I hope we had a miscommunication.
Huh?
I said, I think we had a miscommunication.
Well, you know, in farming, your cattle don't like that miscommunication.
That's
they
right.
Want the hay.
Absolutely.
When the hay's supposed to be there, they want the water. When the water's supposed to be there, they want that salt lick. Okay. They
That's right.
You know, it don't matter. You know, a lot of people think they can just put a fence up, put some cattle there, and
no,
sit there and watch them grow. mm-hmm. and taking them off and get paid. Is that how it works?
No, sir. That ain't how it works, brother, Dr. Richley.
So tell me, how did you get into farming, and why did you choose livestock?
Well, I got into it. At first, of course, you know, Dr. Richley, we started off with the dairy farm out here, and
mm-hmm.
we started off with the dairy farm. I'm from this area. I'm from my people are from Southeast Texas, the Beaumont between
okay.
Winnie is in between Beaumont and Houston. And my mm-hmm. family is from Opelousas, Louisiana. So, you know, all this type, this agriculture and rice farming is big out this way. And, you know, just like everybody else, I ran off to college and tried to get far away as I could away from this type of living. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad called me back.
Yes, sir.
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad called me back to reconsider. So I'm back. I'm back out here now, and you know, and I take it well what you was talking about the timing. Yes, sir.
So
I wanted to make sure that I found a way to contribute to the desires of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as best as I could.
So you decided not to go stay in the dairy business. You decided to go into the livestock business. Why?
Yes, I got into the livestock business because, as you know, Dr. Originally, dairy farming requires a lot of attention. And as I was saying before, you know, I was neither hot, neither cold. I was kind of straddling the fence because I was making money, you know, doing real estate and other things up in Houston. Because I lived in Houston for about 30 years, and I was straddling the fence. When you come out here, you have to be committed. You have to have a level of commitment. And I heard you talking about just a while ago about Mother Nature. And this earth is like that woman. You know, if you don't treat that woman right, she's going to snap back on you. And that's what the repercussions that I'm trying to recover right now, so me and the earth won't divorce. So I'm trying to stay together with her right now. You know, I'm fighting. You know, I'm trying to get a head start before the spring starts, right? And you know, I don't really like getting on horses and nothing like that. So everything that I do in terms of the herd, Dr. Ridgely, is everything I do, I put my hands on them. So they so I shake the bucket, and I don't have to run after nothing. I don't have to run after anything, and I limit to mostly cows. I don't want to have any bulls because they have a tendency of, you know, breaking out, and I don't want to have
right.
them talking
now,
about
now, and you said out. Some, you said something very, very interesting. Okay, can you explain to people what you're talking about when you say you don't like to do a lot of running? You set up a system where they got to come to you. Now, that's what I see.
Yes,
that
sir.
You're saying, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. So, whenever everything that I have out here was born out here. Everything out here, I haven't gotten anything from nowhere else. So everything. So my cows don't get sick. You know, meaning that they get all the colostrum from their mothers. They get all their colostrum. So my cows don't get sick as such. And whenever they're young, I put my hands on them. So they familiar, they're not wild, you know, so they don't just, when they see me, they don't take off. So I got a hand on them, and I got a quick story for you right here. You know, it just happened just recently, right? I had a bull that was born. I knew him when he was a baby. He came up, and he had got up to about maybe like 500 pounds. I don't trust no bull. I don't trust him, but I thought I had enough relationship with him like this, and I'd just get him in the headlock sometime and pop him on his head and tell him to get out the way. Well, my neighbor called me. He jumps over the gate. He has some longhorns across the field. And my neighbor called me and said, "Oh, man, your bull done got over here." I said, "Okay." And he said, "I got him trapped up in my corral." I'm sorry.
Hold it. Why did that bull go over there? Tell him why now.
Well, there's
some females over there. Some heifers over
that's
there.
Right, that's right. Well, I was about to get to it.
Okay.
Well, you let the cat out the bag, but nevertheless, that's what it was. So he goes over there. Now, I call him, I shake the bucket, and he comes. So I walk over there. He has him in, like, in his corral. He got a long run that, you know, when I go shake the bucket, and I say, well, why wasn't he not coming? He like, peeks around the corner, around a tree. I was like, man, that's some strange behavior. I say, something happened. So I walk over there. He's like a teenager now. Just, you know, whoever's on the line, just think about a teenager, you know, when they've been exposed to a young girl. And they got this disposition about them. And anytime I'm around any type of bull, particularly, I always have a way out. I always find me a way out, how I'm going to get out of here if I have to get out of here, regardless of what type of relationship I have with the animal or whatever. I got to figure out a way how I'm going to get out of here. So
come on now.
I get close enough to a tree, so I know if I just drop the bucket, I can jump up and grab the tree and stand on the barbed wire and hold on to the tree if I had to get away from him. Well, that's almost what I had to do. I brought the bucket over there, and he came and he bumped me in the hip with his head. And I said, oh, man. And I dropped it, dropped the bucket, and he attacked the bucket, so I was able to get away from it. He was over there kicking it with the other cows over there. He'd been kicking it over there. So he was chilling over there with the cows, got his nature, released.
Got that smell, got that smell, that heifer, that heifer, she's in heat. He got that smell, and hey, you know what to do. Don't get in the way between me and my heifer.
That's exactly it. So the thing about it, and when that happened, you know, when they start behaving like that, Dr. Ridgely, I have there's a continued problem. They found whatever way they found to get out, they're going to keep doing it, and I had to get them rid of them. I ended up taking them to the cell, and believe it or not, I was so embarrassed. I thought that I was going to get at least about $800 for him, right? He was about 600 pounds. And, you know, the market, the beef prices change, you know. And at this part of the season right now, you know, Dr. Ridgely, where everybody start trying to cull because you don't want to carry that feed bill through the winter. That hay bill and that feed bill, you really don't want to carry through the winter, so you really want to try to dump. But my cows are fine because I got them under control like that, but I tried to get rid of this bull so I won't have a continued problem. So I got rid of him. Man, they gave me $200 for that bull. I said, oh, my God.
What? $200? How much did he weigh?
600 pounds. What happened was I had someone to bring him up there to the cell, and I wasn't there to, you know, contest it or PR him and get him up out of there. And so the people ended up walking away with a bull for $200.
Man, come on, man.
I could have slaughtered him and made $1,200. I had a slaughter
made $1,300. If you had slaughtered him and cut him up yourself.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Sold him in part. Well,
yes, sir.
Brother, next time don't get so attached to that bull. cut him up.
Cut him up, man.
Well, you know,
yeah,
cut him up.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
I say that, but, you know, I don't have cows. I don't have animals. And
yes, sir.
One of the reasons I don't have animals is that I don't have the time to
take care
of them because
they are
your responsibility now. They're domestic. They're like your children.
That's right.
And I know my time is not. I may be gone for a couple of days, you know, and that don't work. You know what I'm out. And we had a horse out here, and who first got the farm. The person who sold the minister the farm gave him a horse. And we had the same problem with that horse. That horse would leave our farm and go down 3 miles back to his old home and jump the fence into the heifers. Okay? Into the female horses.
What
do you call a female horse? Your mare. The mare.
Yes, sir. Yes,
and so then the man would come back with a horse complaining, man, y'all got to keep your horse, you know, he jumped the fence. He jumped out there and he jumped that fence. I said, okay, so we tied him up. But when we tied him up, they got these big horse flies.
Yeah.
And these horse flies towed him up.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't run from them because he's tied up.
Yeah.
He's only running in a tight circle, and then it get tighter and tighter and tighter around the pole. Right?
Yes.
Oh, man, it just broke my heart
choked
to
him
see
out.
Him suffer like that. It broke my heart to see him suffer like that. And so we finally did get take the horse to give it to the minister, got a way to get it up there to him. I was so glad to see him go. I love that horse. But I said, man, and so that right there was called an ingram. I didn't know the words I get. About animals. I just don't want for them to suffer under my tutelage, under my responsibility. So, it is a big responsibility when you have animals that now your children, like, they're domesticated. They can't make it in the wild. If they make it in the wild,
that's
they wouldn't need you. They do more than bump you. You know what I'm talking about?
That's
but
they
really look at you like parents, and you have to be there for them. But I digress.
Yes, sir.
And I do understand a little bit about, what you're saying, brother. Yeah. It is a lot of people think they just put a fence up and come check them once a week. You know what I mean? It don't work that way.
No. In fact, Dr. Reed, I had a brother call me from Florida, and he was telling me about his family had some land and he was going to do it. You know, the questions I start asking is not that I know more than anybody or anything like that. I've been around it, because that's my people into this, and not really deep into it. But however, I would ask the question. About, hey, man, okay, he said, I'm going to give him some cows. They start talking about Derek. I'm going to say, brother, I'm telling you, man, he's talking about going down there once a week. He's about 100 miles away. I say, brother, that's not going to work. I say, man, first question I'm asking, I say, you got water? Because you know that well, the well water, Dr. Ridgely, you got to dig that well. If you don't have city water, you got to dig that well, and that well can be expensive. Depends on how deep you're going and stuff like that. So I said, hey, man. I said, I ain't think about that. I said, okay. Now let's take the dairy scenario. You got to milk those cows sometimes two, maybe three times a day. Are you ready for that? Yeah,
a day?
I didn't know that.
Every
day?
Yeah.
You're going to have to get them at least two. Yeah, at least twice a day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to get them in the morning.
7 days a week?
7 days a week. That's why I didn't want to do it, Dr. Ridgely. Because it takes, you can't go nowhere. You cannot go anywhere. You can't go anywhere. You can't go anywhere. And I was one of them people that like to travel because I know if I leave these cattle, I got kinfolk out here. So, I get them to come by and they cowboy type people. They'll come by and check off and I got my water. My water is constantly running. And especially in the summertime, they eat grass. Mm. I got plenty of grass. So what you brought up to me, Dr. Ridgely, when you were, we've been going over Study Guide 18, and the minister was talking about Cain and Abel, right? And Cain had the issue with the issue that Abel, he just had the husbandry going on, the sheep or whatever, he had the sheep going on, right? The land, and he said, man, I've been tilling the earth, and this and that or what have you. And I came to the realization that Cain just didn't quite see what you just got through saying. You got to treat them like you got children there. Cain didn't see what he had to go through, what Abel had to go through. Man, I had to work through it too. Eventually the minister talks about eventually, hey man, because I didn't need you at that time. I didn't need you, Cain, for what you need. I needed this lamb right now. It's valuable what you're doing. Now, this has nothing to do with me and you. I'm just talking about what came up to me, about it, because some people don't see or recognize the relevance of the husbandry part of it. But if Cain wouldn't have been tripping, if Cain wouldn't have been tripping, Cain should have said, okay, let's see how we can work together because I need you because I need your fertilizer. I need your cow manure for fertilization and all that. Okay, we can work together.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? If he would have saw it, if he would have asked me to question God in the proper spirit, he probably would have got a good answer.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That just goes to show, the grass always looks green on the other side. you know, people do not know what somebody else is going through. You see what somebody else has, and you might be envious and jealous, but you don't know what they're going through for that. So
that's right.
Find your mission. Find your mission.
That's right.
Right. And
yes,
and do the best you can in your mission. However, what's unfortunate is I don't know if you're on the line when I was talking about this, but what's unfortunate is here you are, you're doing the best that you can, and you still don't seem to be getting ahead, but then the black farmers found out later on that the white farmers were getting money from the government.
Yes.
Whereas the black farmers were dependent on the sale of their products for their income, the white farmers getting money on the table from everybody's tax money.
That's right.
And so you're looking and so the children didn't know this either. And so the children of the farmer, or the black farmer, were looking at him, and they look at the white farmer, and the white farmer was doing better, and the black children thought the black farmer was stupid, was dumb, didn't know that the white farmer was getting money on the table. It was a scam going on, you know?
Sir.
So,
sir.
Again, we should all find our mission and do the best we can at our mission, and Allah will bless us.
Yes, sir.
But it is tough, no matter which mission you take. It is tough. So it's farming all you do, Brother Danny, or do you still do some of your other real estate stuff?
Well, I have been doing that, and, you know, since the COVID thing jumped off.
Okay,
in fact, what I was really going to do, what I really wanted to do is I was going to, I was working on getting this program, you know, dealing with children in agriculture. I'm familiar with the people in the high school. You know, they got their ag program and stuff like that. And I was going to start working with them and doing some stuff until this thing jumped off or what happened. And So that's kind of what I've been doing. A little bit of realism, and that has been hitting on that. So it brings it back to the point what you're just saying, Dr. Ridgely, where, you know, there's because that view that young black children would see a farmer struggling and looking like, hey man, that don't look like fun to me. So I don't want to do that. So the system fed back into, hey man, farming is not good for you. Because look at you know, it's not good for you. You don't look at the white farmers. They got brand new John Deere's and all this other kind of stuff, you know. And you know, my little New Holland is starting to take a little toll and this and that or whatever. They got equipment. They got the proper equipment.
Right.
And when we out there trying to do certain things, you know, it almost looked like slave labor, you know. And speaking of that, I respect and I see you on Facebook, man, you doing some stuff out there. My goodness. Because planting is not my thing. My mother-in-law and my wife, they do get all the seedlings together. And Brother Nadir, formerly Brother Mark, he was out of Baton Rouge. Now he's in Houston now. He's a truck driver. But he comes out, they do that. I really don't do that.
Well,
they
say to each his own. I do understand why people don't want to do what I do, brother. I really do understand that. But you know, I'm just kind of stuck because that's my mission. And so,
yes, sir.
You know, I have to die on my post doing my mission because otherwise, you know, what use is living? I mean, so.
Yes, sir.
I try to explain to people, I really do try to make farming look, you know, fun. You know, I try to.
And you do.
You know, tell.
And you do.
You know, I try to, you know what I mean? But it ain't as easy as I'm. As you can see through the line, right? It ain't as easy as I'm trying to show it to people.
Yes, sir.
I don't want to turn young people completely off of it.
Yes,
so I don't show them the bad part, okay? And I don't show them the cussing parts when everything break, it can break. You know what I'm talking about? And you sitting there looking, what the? My favorite thing is, what the? You probably know the other word to it. But that's what I go through out here. Because it's like everything that can break a fail does, and now you got to fix that and continue to try to keep things on schedule and you be up all night. I'd be up all night, you know, in my bed. My wife is sleeping. I'm over there thinking. I'm laying. I'm quiet, but my mind is I'm trying to figure out what to do next, and then what to do if this do this. Then what I'm gonna do?
Yes, sir.
So it's like,
yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, Dr. Richard, I'll tell you what. One of the things, because what you're saying is really what it does. This is my thought. When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was directing his followers, you know, to get into agriculture and these things like that, and because you can't really have no job trying to do this type of work, this has to be your job. You know, I mean, you got to figure out a way how to make money. You know, try to figure out a way to pull in some money doing some things, and you know, and it can be a little bit. I experienced some poverty, you know, here and there, or whatever. But it's okay though, because I'm aware, because I know. But one thing I know more about is that this draws you closer to God. This draws you closer to Allah, because you have to sit up, like you're saying, you're sitting up all night trying to figure out something. Right now, my backhoe is broke. I need to replace some seals on it. My bucket on my tractor is broke. I got a pipe that needs to be fixed. These are all problems. So God solves problems. You know what I'm talking about. So I don't know who else listens
to
this
or
whatever, but God solves problems. So God gives us problems to resolve and solve, so that it makes life worth living for me. Because I'm like, man, I'm constantly, but in my mind, I'm trying to get out of this world. Because in my mind, it's like, man, I ain't doing nothing. Man, I ain't really producing a lot of money like I need to or whatever. And I recall a minister talking about, you know, the importance of agriculture. And one day the farmers, on the time it must be done, he talked about the farmers going to be, you know, we're going to do pretty good. I'm paraphrasing what he said, however. You know, but nevertheless, because we got problems to work out every day. We got problems to work out every day.
You know, I tell people.
My neighbor come telling me the dog killed a goat. My neighbor, I say, man, what?
The dog killed
a goat. My dog killed a goat. Now, my dog run from a three-legged dog. I saw him running. I go exercise. I ride my bike. And my dog was running, sprinting away from a three-legged dog. I say, man, I say, okay. And then I put my Farrakhan hat on. And at that time, I said, okay, well, how much do I owe you, man? I said, oh, it's no problem. You didn't. Blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, that's fine. So I sent my daughter to Tractor Supply. I don't know if y'all have those up there where that's a supply place or whatever. I told her to go get a gift card, and I wrote on there, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. This is around Christmas time. I apologize and that or whatever. You know, so I had to put my Farrakhan hat on or whatever. So, you know, so those. These types of, you know what I'm saying, these types of things. And all my neighbors, they're about a football field away from me all the way around, right? But I still, three of them, I don't too much, I don't care for none of them really, you know, but for the most part, I have to keep some type of relationship. I don't call them every day. I don't go by their house, but I wave. Everybody wave.
Right.
Try to be cordial with one another, because you don't know when you may be in a predicament or they may be in a predicament, right? Because I done pulled them out of some stuff. I done pulled them out of some stuff. And, you know, so here it is right now. But the only reason I'm able to function like that is because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us the knowledge of God and the devil. So I know what to expect out of this relationship. I know what to expect. I'm not going to sit up there and call them people no devils. I got some friends, you know, they come by, man, that's the language they use. Man, that's them white folks, man. Man, they don't need to come over. I say, hey, man, chill out, man. Don't you start no war over here with me. You know what I'm saying? Hey, man, you're about to leave, man.
He's going to start a war for you to fight, because he could be back in the city chilling. He's going to start a war for you to fight because he could be back in the city chilling. No, man, shut the hell up.
Yes,
you know what I mean? This is my territory.
Sir.
You do things according to my. You know, the minister told me, Dr. Ridgey, you know, I put you over the farm. Anybody come to the farm, they're under you. Now, when you go into the mosque, you under whoever's in authority at the mosque. But they come to the farm.
Yes, sir.
You the man. I'm holding you responsible. Anything and everything going on, I'm holding you responsible.
That's your mosque.
I'm going to tell you this funny story. It was a couple year or two after I was here. We had a drought spell, and so I called the minister up. I said, "Brother Minister, we need some rain. Brother Minister, could you pray for some rain? You know what the minister told me?
No.
You pray. Yeah, he did.
Yes,
so
sir.
You pray. And then he ended it like this.
Wow.
Sin in the man, sin in the land. Sin in the land.
Yes. Well, yes, sir. Wow. Man. Wow.
Huh? Huh?
Wow.
Sin in the land, sin in the land.
Wow. Man.
So, so you know, I didn't call the minister no more about no problems.
Yes, sir. Wow. That is something. Wow.
Hey, can you repeat
that brother.
Again? Repeat. Can you repeat that again, doctor? Can you repeat that again, what he said?
He said, so I asked the brother, I said, Brother Minister, we need some rain because we didn't have no rain. It's been a drought. So could you pray to Allah for some rain? He said, Brother, you pray.
Wow.
A little pause. Then he said, sin in the man, sin in the land.
Wow. Yeah.
So, brother, that put me in a reflective moment and looking over myself and trying to figure out what I need to get straight.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And so,
yes, sir.
You know, that's the way it's been, you know, down here. And it is a blessing because I have to fix myself as well as the land.
Yes, sir.
As well as the equipment.
Right. That's right.
I have to look introspective in myself and
yes,
see, did that come from me? Or is that just a problem that Allah wants me to see something?
Yes,
sir. You have to try to figure out, did it something I do wrong? Or maybe nothing I did wrong, but something he wants me to learn from this.
Yes,
okay?
Sir. Yes,
now,
sir.
One of the things that by not being in a business that you were raised to do, a lot of black
yes,
folks,
sir.
They start business and they stop when they run into problems. Because they think that, well, you know, maybe this is not for me. That may not be necessarily so. It may be that you just are supposed to learn something from this, but keep going. Don't quit because things are not going right.
That's right.
Because we don't have that experience from working on our parents, we don't understand that everything, you know, there's going to be problems. But you
that's
can
right.
overcome them, but there going to be problems. And
yes,
I got
sir.
A problem right now. One of my problems is I'm talking too much. And I haven't allowed anybody to call in.
Man.
Brother Calvin, did anybody want to call in?
You heard a guest. If you have a question, if you got a comment, or you want to request more information from our guest, please press the 1 on your pad, and we will bring you into the conversation. So far, Dr. Richard, no one's in the queue yet. Wait a minute.
Okay.
Wait a minute. We got somebody. Somebody pressed 1.
Okay.
Let me bring them in. Caller with the last 4 digits, 4832. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yes, assalamu alaikum, family. Dr. Ridgely, Brother Mark. I got wind of the call. I said let me call in, and you know, just say one or two things. The first thing I would like to say is that everybody in the nation, we should help subsidize the farm and Dr. Risley's efforts through the 3-year economic program. And if 1,000 people at a minimum every month would donate just $5, the minimum of $5, you know, that would be something that that would put money into the farm, and Dr. Risley would be able to get the equipment and fix some of the things that go broke and buy new equipment and other things. Also encourage the younger people to look into farming and to understand it, that with the educational system that we have, we can solve through education and the art of thinking, solve some of these problems for the next generations coming along to make farming easier. So that's all I had to say. But everybody that's on the line and throughout the nation, let's help subsidize that farm by donating to the 3-year economic program and networking and whatever we can to do to ease the pain and the efforts that brothers like yourselves are putting into this work. Assalamu alaikum.
Listen, thank you so much. And remember what I told you earlier. The white farmers are being subsidized from your paycheck.
Yes.
Okay? The U.S. Department of Agriculture's budget is like second to the Pentagon. And that money is really a weapon to use against the black farmers by subsidizing the white farmers. So black farmers like you and I, Brother Danny, we have to try to make it happen based on the cost of production and the price that we receive in the market. Just like you took a bull to market 600 pounds, you only got $200 when you should have got at least $800, but you just got $200.
Yes,
so what is a man supposed to do with $200?
Yes,
so
sir.
Again, the white farmers are subsidized with your tax money that comes out your check, whether you like it or not, and they've been getting it for years. This is why they got all the best equipment and everything, because it's your tax money. So
yes,
support the 3-year economic savings program.
That's right.
Because we got to move to the next level now. We got to start buying more farmland.
There's
farmland coming up for sale now because the white farmers, their children are not going to go into farming. A lot of them are not going to go into farming. So when the old man dies, these farms are going to be for sale. And it's Chinese and Europeans, everybody's buying up. When I go to an auction, people be on the phone representing somebody else. You have people that are at the auction, but you have people there who are representing somebody else on the phone. And I'm saying now, I'm not bidding today, but if I'm bidding and on the other side of that phone is a Chinese somewhere, man, I ain't got them deep pockets. All right?
Right.
And that's what they're doing. So somebody else got a call?
No, sir. I was saying Bill Gates could be on the other side of that phone.
Ooh. Ooh.
Wow.
Talk about that. Bill Gates now is the largest single landowner in America.
Wow.
Bill Gates. And Bill Gates is the supporter of all these GMOs, and he's also the supporter of this impossible meat. He's invested in that. And they got robots. They've been studying how farmers work by putting sensors, keeping up with farmers, small farmers, in the home, in the field. And now they're going to teach robots how to take the jobs, the farm work from the farmer, and the robots do it. And then they have all these chemicals. And then he's also controlled the seed bank, the 15 seed banks for the world. He wants to get in there and genetically modify all the varieties of seeds that are domesticated that we use, and then patent it. Once he modifies it, then he wants to patent it. So he'll patent all the seeds in the world, all the varieties. So you're going to have to come through him, and he's going to put in it whatever he wants to, the same thing that he's putting in these vaccines. They're doing what they want to do to you. Now, you know, I got a little funny thing. I'm going to let you go. People say, is your crop GMO? Do you grow GMO crop? Well, no, I don't, but I'm going to ask you a question. Are you taking one of them GMO shots? That messenger RNA, that's genetically modified, man. So you asked me about a GMO crop, but you going to take a GMO shot?
Yes.
Get out of my face. Because that's what that shot is. It tells you it's genetically modified. They manufactured that thing. Okay?
Wow.
It's completely artificial.
Wow.
So yet you put it in your arm?
Wow.
Allah is blessing us by allowing people to drop dead right after they take it.
Yes, sir.
So that we can see that this thing is straight up poison. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, Bill Gates is trying to take over food and the vaccines and medicine. Impossible foods, growing meat in a petri dish. Come on, y'all.
Wow.
This was a brave new world. 1984. For real. Okay? You got Frankenstein here. For real.
Yeah.
Now,
yes,
Mr. Farrakhan has told you don't take the shot. Mr. Farrakhan has said to separate. Mr. Farrakhan has said to go into business for yourself. Mr. Farrakhan has said to supply your people's needs and their wants. Get paid while you serve. Now, are you going to continue to depend on the devil for a job when he ain't got jobs for his own? And look what they're doing. Robots going to run everything. Look what they're doing. You go to Walmart. Okay, you go to Kroger. They're eliminating all the humans.
You
got to
go
check your own self out. Check your own self out.
Yes.
Come on now. Can't you see what the handwriting's on the wall? They about to get rid of all y'all. It's coming time. It's like you had to get rid of that bull because you're in trouble. You done got too, he got too big for his britches.
Yes, sir.
We done got too big for our britches, according to our former slave master's children. And now,
yes, sir.
Mr. Farrakhan has showed us that they intend to cull. They're not intend to. They're doing it right now. This is the culling program. So,
right.
Thank you so much, Brother Dan. Anything else? How do people kind of, any other website or email? How do people bother you, brother? Because now they want to know some things about livestock. How can they bother you?
Yeah, I mean, I give them my number. They can call me directly. They can call me directly.
Go ahead.
Whenever, because.
What's your number?
And that number is area code 281-507-6015. That's area code 281-507-6015.
And thank you so much, brother, because it is so comforting to have a farmer and a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad through Mr. Farrakhan, because we have a lot in common and we can see through a whole lot of things that other people can't see. Oh, praise
yes.
you to Allah. Thank you so much, brother.
Yes,
got to have you back.
Sir. Yes, sir.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You, sir.
Oh, here's my girl, Gaina. Talk about it, Gaina. Let us sing. Let us sing.
I just walked in to find you here with that sound.